It's a real privilege to be talking at this symposium. And I was thinking, as Larry was presenting, my talk is as far removed from yours as one can imagine. And that's really a tribute to Malcolm, the diversity of work that he supervised and pioneered in. As I give this presentation, I want to acknowledge my co-authors. In particular, a lot of this work you will see has come from Mart Farina. Unfortunately, he couldn't be here. He really should have been giving this presentation, but he certainly sends his warm regards, and the other authors do as well. Right, before I start, it's well to consider that we should be eternally grateful. Being a highly capable and multi-skilled man, Malcolm Sumner could have decided against soil science. There were a number of other options at hand. This was the baseball team he started in Pietermaritzburg, where the university was. Obviously, the problem there was not enough money and in those days, and he moved on, tried his hand at another career, and Hollywood wasn't funding that as well as it should. In the middle there, for those of you who remember, that's Derek Scotney. So fortunately, those careers didn't blossom, and he decided on soil science, and that's where we are today. Right, I'm going to be talking about soil fertility management in a particular province of southern Africa, and that's KwaZulu-Natal on the eastern seaboard, where it's characterized by rivers running from west to east and characterized by considerable soil diversity. soils vary from red and yellow oxysols and ultisols. The texture contrast alfisols, mollisols, deep gray arenosols, and then shallow inceptisols, some calcareous and some not. Where's this mouse? Much of the work I'll be discussing comes from dryland cropping areas and comprises oxysols, ultisols, and alfisols. Right, what I'd like to start off with then is talk a little bit about soil acidity. And this, of course, is the pioneering work that Malcolm Sumner was involved in, the characterization of the contribution of aluminium to yield depression. This was him and Nev Reeve did pioneering work in this regard. And fertility problems that have been identified, toxicities mainly relating to aluminium, sometimes manganese. Aluminium-induced magnesium deficiency has been identified as a significant problem. Deficiencies of micronutrients, I'll run through those if I can get through this talk. Molybdenum and zinc in particular on the acid soils, on the more sandy soils, boron. Now, Prof. Sumner highlighted the appropriate liming strategy in this comment in a paper that Tim and Yamada published. Results clearly show that most crops, including legumes, do not respond to lime above the point where toxicities are eliminated. And this has essentially dictated our approach to liming in KwaZulu-Natal, in particular with regards to the economic use of lime. The effects of aluminium on root are often spectacular. Here, maize roots drastically affected by aluminium toxicity, no root hairs, short stubby roots, dysfunctional roots. And this is typical of the effect of severe aluminium toxicity on a moderately tolerant crop such as maize. This is a highly tolerant crop. These are roots of sugarcane, and increasingly we're finding severe subsoil acidity affecting sugarcane production, and yes, sugarcane roots rendered essentially ineffective through severe aluminium toxicity, and of course accompanied by very low calcium levels. This is one of Mart's classic slides. This was a liming trial. This whole area, of course, was treated. The whole area was planted at the same time. On the right, treated with lime, aluminium toxicity eliminated by liming. On the left, aluminium toxicity not addressed. And the interesting thing in that slide, the very interesting thing is that the short maize was affected by drought, indicating you can see the drought effects here, the moisture stress in the short maize, in contrast to the maize on the right, which had aluminium, which had lime. So the shorter maize, roots dysfunctional, the plant not able to take up water and nutrients. And this is typical of the effect of aluminium on reducing crop yields. Now, in terms of predicting aluminium effects, the effects of acidity on crop growth, it's been repeatedly found that soil pH is an unreliable indicator of the impact of aluminium on plant performance, on crop performance. Here we can see at a pH of about 3, yields ranging from 50% right up to 100%, pH of 3.8 to 4 in potassium chloride. This is normal potassium chloride. Okay, and then if we, so clearly pH is not a reliable indicator, and the problem then became identifying a more reliable indicator. And soil acid saturation, expressed as aluminium and hydrogen, titratable aluminium and hydrogen in a KCl extract over total cations, has proved to be a far more reliable indicator of the aluminium hazard in soils. And so here's that same data from that previous slide, on data from 4 soils, and the Al plus H discriminating between responsive and unresponsive plots in the various experiments. Right, in the work that's been done, they've been in our pasture and cropping work, we found major differences between species and cultivars in terms of their tolerance to the acidity hazard. Here's a demonstration that was run. Some of you may recall this work. It was done at for the International Acid Soil Symposium on a severely acid altisol. In the background, that was limed from the pointer backwards. The aluminium problem had been addressed. In the foreground, no lime applied, and we can see in terms of maize cultivars, significant differences in tolerance to acidity, but certainly on the soil, virtually no growth of maize where lime hadn't been applied. So in the background, yeah, the only difference between that and this, lime and no lime. Very interesting, here's sugarcane, a row of sugarcane, and the sugarcane, very tolerant of acid soil conditions. The response to lime there was only about 20%. Measured at the end of the season. Here's a shot from the same trial. Sunflowers, absolutely no, the sunflowers not even germinating in the acid soil here, not even coming out of the ground because of the severe acidity. That's Erogrostis teff, showing severe acidity effects here. Interesting, this is cowpeas, one of the most acid-tolerant crops. And small-scale farmers use cowpeas very extensively because of this ability ability to tolerate aluminium toxicity. Looking then at some results from lime trials, Prof, you'll recall this is Tabamhlophe, where you did much of your initial work on soil acidity. This was a pasture lime trial going down, but let's look at some results from calibration trials for the various crops. And what we found, if we plot pH against acid saturation, we found that species and cultivars differ significantly in terms of the responses to acidity. So the highly tolerant cultivar species, sugarcane, cowpea, the most tolerant. Sugarcane is remarkably tolerant to acidity. Erogrostis curvula tolerant, Pennisetum clandestinum, cucuyu grass, very tolerant. And the other end of the scale, moderately tolerant oats, soya, potato, maize. On the other end of the scale, very sensitive species are the legumes lucerne, white clover, perennial ryegrass. We found to be significantly more sensitive to acidity than annual ryegrass, and both of those are cultivated very extensively in southern Africa. Just looking at, in the case of Pennisetum clandestinum, cucuyu grass, we can see that as acid saturation is increased up to very high levels, very little effect on the relative yield of the species on 3 soils. so highly tolerant, kikuyu, and of course it's native to East Africa. Mart's work has shown significant differences between maize and soybeans in terms of their tolerance to soil acidity. Here we have an acid plot, that whole area receiving a very low lime rate, and no yield of maize from this treatment, but he eventually at the end of the season got 2.8 tons of soils. And soils, the roots of soils appear to have the ability to drill into acid soils far more effectively than maize roots. This is a pasture trial. This whole area was established, the whole area here was established to white clover. Ladino clover 1 year before this photograph was taken. And within a year, this is what had happened to the plots that it had. It was a factorial trial, PK lime. And within a year, this is the effect. Those plots there had been completely taken over by Erigrostis curvilii and Erigrostis plana. Where no potassium was applied, this plot here, a broadleaf sorrel had taken over, and where PK and lime had been applied, the clover was persisting very well. And in fact, this clover persisted here for 5 years after this photograph was taken. No other species invaded where PK and lime had been applied. Manganese toxicity is becoming an increasing problem. Particularly, soils have been anthropogenically acidified. Manganese does come in, and here are some symptoms of manganese toxicity. Subsoil acidity, let's look at that very quickly then. Subsoil acidity is an increasingly worrying phenomenon, in particularly in the sugar industry. This is a photograph of maize roots stopping at about 20, 30 centimeters because of a severely acid upsoil. This is subsoil. There's Mart with his Georgia dog's cap on still. Showing, holding up a maize plant where the plants could just be readily pulled out of the ground because roots were limited to the top 10 to 15 centimeters. Now, the impact on that on drought tolerance, on nutrient acquisition, obviously, that shallow rooting, the impact is severe. This is a recent photograph of sugarcane. Sugarcane, the crop was treated 5 years before taking this photograph with 1 ton of lime in the plant furrow, and roots stopping at 20 to 30 centimeters, absolutely no penetration. And this is a widespread phenomenon in the dryland sugarcane production areas now, the rain-fed areas, and calcium and levels in the subsoils are extremely low, often less than 40 parts per million, 30 parts per million, and aluminium levels extremely high. And there's a limit to what sugarcane is the most tolerant of our crops, but there's a limit to what it can take. Mart's outstanding work on addressing subsoil acidity. This is just a quick highlight or a summary of that. What we've got plotted here is year by year of following initial treatments which were applied in 1983. The various treatments, incorporation of lime into the subsoil, and then 10 tons of gypsum applied at the start. And you can see the cumulative benefit in terms of maize grain. Gypsum pulls away from the other treatments very significantly with succeeding years. So gypsum, very effective treatment and economical. A last slide on this, I think. This is a very interesting slide with gypsum and without gypsum. And the maize without gypsum showing severe nitrogen deficiency, although both areas received the same nitrogen rate. And this really is just reflecting poor root development, poor root penetration to the subsoil, and poor nitrogen acquisition because of an impaired root system. Moving on to nitrogen then. Some thoughts on nitrogen. The perennial problem, what are the nitrogen we face is the extent of nitrogen contribution from the soil organic matter. Here's an example of a trial that Mart ran for 17 years in an oxisol in the Greytown area, for those of you who know the area. And this is, after 17 years, still no response to nitrogen on the site. 120 kilograms on the right, and 0 kilograms on the left. And this is the problem that we face. Some soils just have the ability to supply nitrogen continuously year by year. And we need to, our challenge is to predict that. And we're working on various tests for that now. In order to make valid nitrogen recommendations, our approach has been to develop nitrogen calibration curves from various sites on various soils, long-term calibration curves, and base recommendations on that. The bottom curve here is from that oxysol in the Grey Town area, showing no response over a very long period. Some interesting data that's been coming out from some sugarcane topsoil work. We've been doing work on sugarcane topsoils. If we look at total nitrogen, at the total nitrogen related to soil carbon, obviously, as soil carbon increases, the total nitrogen in the topsoil increases. So with increasing carbon, there's increasing nitrogen, total nitrogen in the topsoil. And so I've plotted that as kilograms of nitrogen in the topsoil. Now, if we then look at the soil carbon to nitrogen ratio, these incidentally, this is over 100 soils represented here. If we look at the soil carbon to nitrogen ratio, as the soil carbon increases, we found that in these sugarcane topsoils, the carbon to nitrogen ratio widens. So as the total carbon, as we move to humic soils, as we move to soils with higher carbon contents, the carbon to nitrogen ratio widens very significantly. And then we did a, if we look at anaerobically available in those soils, we can see that this widening of the carbon to nitrogen ratio is reflected in the amount of available, the percentage of total N that's available from those soils. So as the carbon to nitrogen ratio widens, so the percentage of that nitrogen that's available for crop uptake decreases. And this is something Prof. Simner and Esso are looking at currently. Just finally on nitrogen, we've done a significant amount of work's been done on tailoring nitrogen recommendations for pastures. Now it's a double-edged sword in terms of pasture management. You need nitrogen to optimize yield, but as nitrogen increases, so soluble sugars in the plant decrease. So here you can see excess nitrogen here. Animals don't want to have anything to do with it because the grass has got very low sugar levels, low nitrogen rate, and they flatten the grass because the sugar levels are the highest. So there's this balance between optimizing yield and optimizing quality that we've been pursuing. How much time do I have, Greg?
5 minutes.
Ish. Okay. Phosphorus very quickly then. Big responses to phosphorus, high phosphorus fixation in many of these soils. We've done calibration trials on a number of crops and developed calibration curves. Now this is an interesting set of data from some of Mart's work. 1981-82, they got 2 tonnes per hectare of maize grain. In 83-84, 7 tonnes per hectare. And the optimum didn't vary. So an excellent illustration of the Brace sufficiency concept for an immobile nutrient. Yield responses to phosphorus or soybeans in the background with phosphorus, in the foreground without phosphorus. I'm going to skip that slide. Looking at potassium, soils with many of our soils have low potassium reserves, sesquioxic soils, 1:1 clays, low potassium reserves, and here's broccoli showing a very significant response to potassium on Sidora Research Station. On the same site, virtually the same site, maize, huge response to potassium. So these soils, very low potassium reserves. Let me leave that. Soybean showing a response to potassium there. And then if we look at here, calibration curves have been developed for soyas and maize, and we found that soyas have a lower soil K requirement than maize, more efficient in extracting potassium. Response curves for pastures. This is Italian ryegrass, and it's a naturophile. So sodium can substitute very significantly for potassium in terms of the osmotic function in the plant. And here we see a big response to potassium. But plotting data from 3 different sites, we found that the best calibration emerged when we took into account potassium and sodium in the soil. So exchangeable potassium and sodium gave us a better calibration than potassium on its own because of the substitution of sodium for potassium in the plant. Ryegrass can take up to 1% sodium in the dry matter. We found potassium to play a very important role in cold tolerance. Here is a Kikuyu Etaba Mhlophe Prof. A calibration trial for potassium, and this was after the first frost. Kikuyu very sensitive to frost, but with potassium, far more tolerant of cold conditions than without potassium. To close off then, some thoughts on micronutrients. On the sandy soils to the north of the province, boron deficiency, this is a classic example of boron deficiency in Lucerne. Boron deficiency is a major problem. I think those of you who recall Pax Blamey did work on this. This is some very interesting evidence of molybdenum deficiency in maize due to low nitrate reductase activity. So it's pre-germination of maize on the cob due to low molybdenum resulting in low nitrate reductase activity. Molybdenum by lime interaction in soybeans treated with lime in the background, without lime in the foreground here, and these rows, the seed treated with molybdenum, these rows, no seed treatment of molybdenum. So a classic molybdenum by lime interaction in work that Martin and his colleagues had carried out. And of course, that's plotting acid saturation against relative yield of soyas, plus molybdenum, minus molybdenum, and we can see that where the soil had been limed, not much response to the molybdenum treatment, but at high acid saturations, a very big response to moly, reflecting the effect of soil chemistry on molybdenum availability. And of course, that molybdenum treatment there would involve a very small amount and a very low cost compared to the lime. So this is an alternative for managing molybdenum supply in soybeans. Thank you.